The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction and fantasy. I am your host, Beverly Prentice. I hope you enjoy the program. If so, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com. Art Deco Farmhouse. Original hardwood floors, slightly haunted, by Alice Toey. I never would have agreed to meet Elizabeth, except I had hit rock bottom, and I was pretty sure her uncle was haunting my house. By that point, I had realized that buying this place was a mistake. Moving out to the country had been David's idea, but I had fallen in love with the house itself, the blue stone facade, the elaborate wrought iron stair railing, and then one afternoon, I had come home to find David gone, and a truck full of movers carrying out boxes we hadn't even had a chance to unpack. It took me an hour to realize this meant he was breaking up with me. And then there was the ghost. Strange noises from the basement sent me scurrying to bed with a bottle more nights than I cared to admit. I was cleaning up broken glass in the kitchen one morning when my cell phone rang. "Hello, Evan? This is Elizabeth Silvestri. You emailed me about the house?" I hadn't gotten much sleep between the drinking and the ghosts knocking liquor bottles off the kitchen counter. A gear finally clicked. Her uncle had been the previous owner. When David and I moved in, I had lofty thoughts about historical preservation. A neighbor gave me Elizabeth's email for research. "I'm going to be in town next week for some family business. If you're still interested in seeing old photos, maybe I could come by. I'd love to see the place again." On the other side of the house, a door slammed open. A sudden wind blew into the room, scattering papers and knocking over another bottle. Scotch pooled on the counter and dripped on the floor. It was David who had introduced me to Scotch. "Sure," I said. What did I have to lose? The sky was already getting dark when a small blue car turned onto the street and coasted to a stop in front of the house. In November, night comes early in Michigan and stays for a long time. The hall lights flickered. I peered out the front window from behind a dingy curtain. I had meant to clean, at least enough to make the kitchen and living room presentable. The ghost didn't help. No sooner had I finished tidying the space, but it wound up all the drawers and cupboards and dumped trash on the floor. Eventually, I gave up. If this Elizabeth was going to judge me, so be it. I stepped back from the window and waited for the doorbell. Elizabeth was a short woman in her 30s with long, mousy brown hair and tortoiseshell glasses. Her cheeks red from the cold. She wore a puffy purple coat over jeans, a sweater, and black boots. She carried an enormous brown purse. "Evan, it's nice to meet you." I'd been spending so much time alone, it took me a moment to remember how to respond. "Likewise. Come on in." She followed me into the kitchen. The lights were no longer flickering, and the house felt expectant. Hushed, curious. I wondered if the ghost recognized her. I sat at the dining table. I should have offered to take her coat, but she shrugged it off and piled it on one of the chairs. She stood looking all around the room. She took in a shuddering inhale, and I wondered if she might start crying before she pulled herself together with a shake of her head. This brings back memories. I spent so much time here when I was a girl. "May I sit?" "Oh, yes, please do." There was an awkward moment as she pulled her chair back. By now, she was surely noticing what a mess the place was. Mugs stacked in the sink, trash can overflowing with takeout containers. The paint was peeling off the wall in a few places, and one of the bulbs in the chandelier was burned out. Sorry for the mess. The house needs a lot of work. I have ideas. She looked down at her hands, folded them neatly in her lap. My uncle had trouble keeping things up at the end. He had dementia, and I think it started earlier than he let on. A shiver ran through me. Alone in this drafty old house, things breaking that you couldn't fix, and your own mind slowly betraying you. I didn't have to imagine it. Shall we look at some old photos? She put on a bright smile and pulled a large album from her purse. She flipped through, pointing out design features, paint colors, doorknobs, old kitchen wallpaper, the light fixtures that were replaced in the 60s. But I was more interested in the people. There were photos from Christmas morning of a whole family seated around a tree in the living room, stockings and gifts in piles. There were parties and dinners, and one photo, yellowed with age, Elizabeth pointed out a young pregnant woman, her mother, sitting in the same spot where she sat now. In another, she showed me a backyard party. "Is that you?" I asked. Her finger hovered over the photo. "My high school graduation. There's so much room out back. It's great for barbecues. This house is meant for parties, I think. I hope you will have lots once you get the place fixed up." I sat back. Entertaining had been on my mind when I bought this house, but only because of David. He was great at throwing parties. He knew so many people. He always attracted an interesting mix. I was the loner, the introvert who had trouble making connections. "You could have a housewarming," Elizabeth said. The silence lengthened. If I sent an invitation, would any of our mutual friends respond? In losing David, I'd lost the effortless social life I'd grown accustomed to. Elizabeth swallowed, glanced rapidly around the room, uncertain what she had said wrong. Uncle Mike loved entertaining. It took me a moment for me to realize who she meant. I'd only ever seen his name on legal documents as William M. Bloomington. But at the mention of that name, the light over the stove flicked on and off. Elizabeth spun in her seat. "Is there something wrong with that light?" She could see it too. That fact hit me with both relief and despair. The house really was haunted, and I was stuck here, alone, destined to slowly lose my mind, like Uncle Mike. A door slammed on the second floor. What was that? The air pressure seemed to increase. I felt a growing panic. "I think you should leave now." Elizabeth tensed. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to tell you what to do. I just..." A sound like footsteps reverberated across the second floor. I needed to get her out before she started asking questions. I wasn't ready to answer. "It's not you. It's me. This was a bad idea. Please just go." "Of course." Elizabeth grabbed her purse and coat and the album. I followed her to the front door. She turned around on the patio. "I'm really sorry." I slammed the door. I was hiding in the second floor guest bathroom with a mug of rum when Elizabeth called. The house had raged all evening, the worst it had ever been. Doors slamming, furniture shaking, and a smell of ozone like something burning. I had finally retreated to this, the only quiet place. Sitting on the toilet seat, I struggled to recognize the number that appeared on my phone. Downstairs, the old radio in the living room was on full volume. "Hello?" My voice sounded harsh to my own ears. "Evan, it's Elizabeth. I'm calling to apologize." I closed my eyes and massaged my temple. The radio switched to an oldies station. "You don't owe me an apology. I let myself get carried away. I heard from one of the neighbors that you and your boyfriend broke up recently. I should have been more sensitive." The radio jumped to a country western station, the voice of a lonesome cowboy echoing up the stairs. It's all right." Elizabeth's voice stuttered as she inhaled. "Listen, I know you don't owe me anything, and I totally understand if you say so, but I'd love to see the house one more time. I feel bad about my uncle. I wasn't there for him like I should have been. I'd like to walk around the place and remember. Would that be all right? The radio switched off. The house waited for my answer. I could hear my own breathing in the sudden silence. Yes, of course. Thanks again. Elizabeth stood in the front hall, arms wrapped around herself against the chill. This time I had remembered to take her coat. The ghost had been quiet all day. Perhaps it had been saving itself for her visit. Where would you like to start? She lifted her head. Maybe upstairs? Elizabeth followed me up the stairs, trailing her hand along the banister as we walked. At the second floor, she pointed to the first bedroom on the right. Our footsteps echoed in the empty room. Elizabeth walked to a window overlooking the backyard. Below, the grass was covered with a mush of fallen leaves, brown and yellow and black. This was my bedroom. When I was a teenager, I'd come over after Mom and I had a fight. Uncle Mike always let me stay. I thought of the back door slamming open and closed, glasses knocked off the coffee table. What was he like? Oh, he was the best. Like I said, he always had people over, whether it was Sunday brunch or Thursday night TV. He was really into food, so there was always something cooking. Chili in the summer, chicken noodle soup in the winter, and he was great to me. My mom wanted me to be more of a girly girl. Skirts and dresses, makeup. But I wasn't into that. Uncle Mike always let me be myself. He brought me my first pair of Doc Martens when I was 16. I chuckled and Elizabeth smiled in response. Was he ever married? He had a few boyfriends over the years, friends who stayed longer than the rest, but I think he was too gregarious for any one person. We wandered through the rest of the bedrooms, then sat in the living room downstairs. Outside, dusk had arrived, deep shadows pooling beneath the maples and spruce. The world was preparing to hibernate. Elizabeth studied the fireplace. Mom moved out to New Jersey a few years ago to be closer to me. I tried to convince him to come with her, but they could have gotten a two-bedroom apartment together. But he just laughed at the idea. In hindsight, he probably already had dementia. We talked to him every week, but it was hard to see what was really going on. We weren't keeping an eye on him, not like we should have been. I didn't say anything, and Elizabeth laughed briskly. Look at me, carrying on again. A thump in the basement jolted me. A tiny crease of puzzlement formed on Elizabeth's forehead. Before I could speak, the chandelier and the lights in the hallway flickered and turned off, plunging the house into darkness. Elizabeth's face was illumined by the white glow of streetlights through the front window. Is something wrong with the electrical system? The lights turned on, then off, then on again, the back door slamming open and closed in time. Deliberately, like someone wanted to make sure we were paying attention. Elizabeth's eyes widened. What's going on? The noise and flickering lights sped up. Something heavy thumped upstairs, and every sink in the house turned on, all at once. The house is haunted, I said, but my voice was drowned out by a rattle like an earthquake shivering the floor. What? The house, it's... Something glass smashed against the kitchen floor. Elizabeth jumped up. The house is haunted, I shouted. With that, all the noise and movement stopped. The lights went back on as though nothing had happened. Elizabeth stood, breathing hard, eyes wide. She sat again. Haunted? I rubbed a hand over my face. I'm sorry, I probably should have said something earlier, but there's a ghost, and I think it's your uncle. It was a testament to Elizabeth's character that she didn't run out the front door screaming. Instead, she helped me straighten up, turning off the running faucets and closing doors and windows against the chill night air. She found a broom and dustpan and swept up the broken glass in the kitchen, remnants of a wine glass, as it happened, while I closed drawers. You don't have to do that, I said. I'd understand if you wanted to go. She shook her head. And leave you alone with a poltergeist? No way. Besides, what if it is Uncle Mike? Maybe he'll materialize or something, and I'll be able to talk to him again, if it is him. I feel like it's my responsibility to help you. I dug sheets and blankets out of the boxes. While Elizabeth ordered dinner from Pizza Joey's, the best place in town, she assured me, I found the old air mattress David and I had bought and pumped it up, relieved to see that it didn't leak. Elizabeth drove off to get dinner and collect her things from the hotel, while I made up a simple bed for her in the same room where she'd slept as a girl. You're lucky you didn't scare her away, I muttered to the silent house. Be nice while she's here. I woke to the smell of coffee drifting up from the kitchen. I sat up in bed, running a hand through my greasy, tangled hair. Time for a shower. I stood under the water until the heat turned my chest red. I had gotten the best night of sleep I'd had in months, either because of having someone else in the house or because the ghost remained quiet all night. Clean shaved and dressed in jeans and a gray cashmere turtleneck, I headed downstairs, pausing at the landing when I heard a voice. Elizabeth was standing at the kitchen window looking out at the backyard and murmuring softly. She turned in surprise as I walked in, nearly spilling the mug of coffee clutched to her chest. Oh, good morning. Did I interrupt something? I fetched a clean mug from the dishwasher and poured myself coffee. Her face flushed. I was just talking to myself. I arched an eyebrow. Or talking to a ghost? Maybe, Elizabeth laughed. If it is Uncle Mike, there's so much I want to say. Big things like thank you and I'm sorry, but I also wish I could tell him about the little things, like the date I went on last month or my new favorite TV show. Maybe you'll get a chance. A sudden noise made us both jump, but it was just the compressor in the refrigerator kicking on. We tried everything we could think of. Elizabeth looked up instructions online for holding a séance, and we held hands and chanted in the darkened kitchen. Nothing happened, but that could have been because we didn't have the right tablecloth or candles. We talked about burning sage, but fresh herbs were sparse in the Midwestern winter, and the only sage I had was an expired bottle of the spice. Useful for seasoning soups and roast chicken, maybe, but not so helpful for scaring away angry spirits. I suggested holy water, or a priest, but Elizabeth shook her head. No, Uncle Mike was a recovering Catholic. That would just piss him off. I stood in front of the microwave, watching leftover pizza rotate and sizzle. Elizabeth had been right. It was the best pizza place in town. Why do you think he's still here? Elizabeth looked up from her phone, where she was researching New Age stores in Ann Arbor. The microwave dinged. I pulled out the pizza and sat across from her. I shared the theory that had been troubling me. Maybe he was still confused from the dementia and didn't realize he was dead. He was trapped in this house, befuddled and frightened by the intruder who wouldn't leave. It was an awful thought, but Elizabeth just shrugged it off. No, I don't think that's it. Uncle Mike was just so curious, you could even say a busybody. He was interested in everything, and he loved this house. If there was a way to stick around and see what happened to it, he'd find it. He was just that nosy. What do you think it's like being a ghost? Elizabeth paused for me to catch up, her breath a blue cloud in the cold afternoon air. After dropping 2 inches of snow overnight, the sky was finally clear, a rare blue, frothed with bulky white clouds. Late afternoon sunlight slanted through the trees. Elizabeth had suggested we go for a walk, and I had grudgingly agreed. She stood at the top of a rise overlooking a farm, fields of fresh snow stretching to a distant row of leafless trees. An old barn was collapsing in the distance, but the snow made it look picturesque. A Christmas card, an ad for a nostalgic ideal of small-town winter. Do you think it's like dreaming? If it is my uncle, I wonder if he recognizes me. I stepped next to her, bending over to catch my breath. I don't know. I don't believe in ghosts, at least until a few months ago. David was always the superstitious one. We resumed walking, heads bent against the breeze. What was David like? At first, I told her the basic facts. He was an artist, a painter, a sculptor, whose work had found modest success in fine art galleries in Chicago and New York. He was the dreamer, while I was the practical one, the software engineer with an espresso maker and a 401k. We had met at a friend's party 2 years before when he commented on my shoes. Elizabeth was a good listener. I found myself sharing more about the relationship. How had I always worried that I was boring? Until David and I started dating. He took me to art shows. We threw parties together and traveled, talked about books and cinema. And then there was this house, and the idea of creating a place in rural Michigan where friends and artists could gather. It had been David's idea, but I had latched onto it too. But then he left. Maybe he realized I wasn't creative enough to make it work. Elizabeth's brow furrowed. Or maybe he got cold feet. He was the one who couldn't commit to the idea. You're the one who stayed. True. I chose my next words carefully. I wonder sometimes if staying was a mistake. I've been so unhappy here. Elizabeth stopped walking and turned to face me. We were almost home. The house, illuminated by the low sun, cast a long shadow across the fields. A single light gleamed from a second-floor window. You're still grieving. It can take a long time, believe me, I know. I wiped my eyes with the back of a mitten. What helps? Time, mostly, and finding other things to be interested in. Like after Uncle Mike died, I got really into cooking. You could fix up the place, see where that leads you. Maybe you'll still decide to leave, but maybe you'll find a reason to stay. You haven't even unpacked. I did have a lot of ideas. I was going to refinish the floors, buy some period pieces for the living room and dining room. She smiled. Uncle Mike would have loved that. We decided to start with the kitchen. Elizabeth figured out how to connect her phone to the old stereo. I don't know how she did it. The thing is 40 years old and blasted Christmas music. Rudolph, Santa Baby, rocking around the Christmas tree. We opened a bottle of eggnog and drank it with splashes of rum, singing and laughing as we scrubbed off counters and unpacked dishes, glassware, silverware. Elizabeth said it reminded her of the old days. She said she could feel her uncle's presence, as if he had just stepped into the other room. I imagined what the house must look like from the outside. A lovely music box. Lights streaming from the windows, glittering on the newly fallen snow. Deer in the backyard, ears pricked up to the music drifting out. Laughter reverberating, voices singing, carols out of key. The brightness of a house lit up against the winter night. Elizabeth left early in the morning. I have a memory. I'm not sure if it was real or a dream or maybe both. She walks into my bedroom carrying her winter coat folded over her arm. There's someone in the corner chair, and she squats down in front of him and takes his hands, speaking softly. Then she sits on the edge of the bed. She turns her face to the curtains where a thin strand of morning sun enters the room. Don't be afraid, she says, to let some light in now and then. This house is really beautiful, and you deserve to see it. It's July, and the house is looking much better these days. I still have a lot of work to do. I want new cabinets for the kitchen, and I've hardly started on the upstairs. But the living room is a real showplace. I hired a contractor to fix the fireplace and chimney. I refurnished the floors and applied a fresh coat of paint to the walls. I've befriended the owner of the one antique store in town, and she calls me whenever someone brings in anything Art Deco. I started seeing a therapist in the new year, and I'm trying to cut back on the drinking. The ghost became less active when I started redecorating. The last time I heard from him was when I decided to paint the front hallway. I had chosen a monotone gray, but after I applied the first coat, The whole house shook and wailed so badly overnight that I drove to the hardware store the next morning and bought a light robin's egg blue instead. I know it sounds crazy, a ghost with opinions on interior design, but there you have it. I keep thinking back to what Elizabeth said about finding things to be interested in, about how curious her uncle was. I wonder if he's finally satisfied that the house is in good hands and is ready to move on. Speaking of Elizabeth, she sent me her uncle's chili recipe, and I invited some friends to come sample it on the 4th of July. I thought no one would make the drive from Ann Arbor, but a dozen people showed up. We ate and laughed, and I gave everybody a tour of the house. Elizabeth also sent me a Polaroid of her uncle that looks like it was taken at a party in the late 80s. In the photo, he's a much younger man, with a red beard and shining hair, standing by the fireplace and laughing at someone off camera. I framed it and hung it over the mantel, along with my own family photos. I printed out a picture from the 4th of July party and hung that up as well. There's plenty of room left on the wall for new pictures. I'm looking forward to filling the space. The Hunter's Moon by Patricia A. McKillop. They were lost. There was no other word for it. Dawn, trudging glumly through the interminable trees, tried to think of a word that wasn't so definite, that might have an out. Ewan had been quiet for some time. He had stopped kicking over rocks to find creepy crawlies and shaking hard little apples out of gnarly branches onto his head and yelling at her to come look at this. Now he just walked, his head ducked between his shoulders, both hands stuffed into his pockets. He was trying not to reach for her hand, Dawn knew, trying not to admit he was afraid. Lost, misplaced, missing, gone astray. They were in that peculiar place where lost things went. The one people meant when they said, "Where in the world did I put that?" She was stuck with her baby brother in that world. It was gray, with twilight, hilly, and full of trees, and they seemed to be the only people in it. The leaves had begun to fall. Ewan had stopped doing that, too, shuffling through piles of them, throwing up crackling clouds of red and gold and brown. Dawn huffed a sigh, knowing that he expected her to rescue them. She hadn't wanted to take him with her in the first place. She had followed him aimlessly through the afternoon, while he ran from one excitement to the next, splashing across streams and chasing squirrels. Now he was tired and dirty and hungry, and it was up to her to find their way home. Trouble was, home wasn't even home. Here in these strange mountains, which weren't green, but high, rounded mounds of orange and yellow and silver, where rutted dirt roads ran everywhere and never seemed to get anywhere, and nobody seemed to use them anyway. She didn't know how to explain where Uncle Ridley's cabin was, even if they did stumble across anyone to ask. It wasn't like this in the city. In the city, there were street signs and phones and people everywhere, and lights everywhere, too. In the city, not even night was dark. A bramble came out of nowhere, hooked her jeans. She pulled free irritably. Something fell on her head, a sharp little thump, as though a tree had thrown a pebble at her. Ow! She rubbed her head violently. Ewan looked at her and then at the ground. He took one hand out of his pocket and picked up a small round thing out of the leaves. It's a nut. He looked up at her hopefully. I'm starving. She took it hastily. Don't you dare. Why not? Eating nuts never hurt me. That's because you never ate the poisoned ones. She threw it as hard as she could into some bushes. The bushes shook suddenly, flurried and thrumming, with some kind of bizarre inner life. Dawn froze, A bird shot up out of the leaves, battering at the air with stubby wings. It was large and gray, with long, ungainly legs. It fell back to the ground and stalked nervously away, the weirdest bird that Dawn had ever seen. "What is that?" Ewan whispered. He was tugging at his sweater, trying to crawl under it to hide. "I don't know." Then she knew. She had seen that same bird on one of Uncle Ridley's bottles. "It's a turkey," she said wonderingly. "Wild turkey. Where's its tail?" Ewan asked suspiciously. He was still young enough to color paper turkeys at school for window decorations at Thanksgiving. "I guess the pilgrims ate all the ones with tails." She switched away from him. "Stop pulling at me. You're such a baby." He let go of her, shoved his hands back into his pockets, walking beside her again in dignified silence. She sighed again, noiselessly. She was older by 6 years. She had held him on her lap and fed him and helped him learn to read and dreamed into bullies with her backpack when they had him cornered in the schoolyard. But now that she had grown up, he still kept following her, wanting to be with her, though even he could see that she was too old. She didn't want her baby brother hanging around her, reminding her that once she, too, had been small, noisy, helpless, and boring. She kicked idly at a fallen log. Bark crumbled and fell. She had wanted a walk in the woods to get out of the cabin, away from Uncle Ridley's endless fish stories, and her father trying to tie those little feathery things with hooks that looked like anything but flies. But she couldn't just be by herself, walking down a road to see where it went. Ewan had to come with her, filling the afternoon with his chattering and leading them both astray. "I'm so hungry," Ewan muttered, the first words he had spoken in some time. "I could eat Bambi." Bambi was what their mother said their father had come to the mountains to hunt with his brother, who had run away from civilization, to grow a bush on his chin and live like a wild man. Uncle Ridley had racks of guns on his cabin walls and a stuffed moose head he had shot up north. Painted wooden ducks swam across the stone mantelpiece above his fireplace. The room Ewan and their father shared was cluttered with tackle boxes, fishing poles, feathered hooks, reels, knives, handmade bows and arrows. Dawn slept on the couch in the front room, underneath the weary, distant stare of the moose. Once, when she had watched the fire burn down late at night, an exploding ember had sparked a reflection of flame in the deep eyes, as though the animal had suddenly remembered life before Uncle Ridley had crossed his path. A root tripped her. She came down hard on a step, caught her balance. She stopped a moment, looking desperately around for something familiar. There was a farmhouse on the slope of the next hill, a tiny white cube at the edge of a stamp-sized green field. Bright trees at the edges of the field were blurring together, their colors fading in the dusk. The world was beginning to disappear. Dawn's nose was cold. So were her hands. She wore only jeans and her pale blue beaded sweater. The jeans were too tight to slide her fingers into her pockets, and her mother had been right about the sweater. "Ridiculous," she had said, in the country, where there was no one to see her in it, and useless against the autumn chill. "I think we're close," she told Ewan, who was old enough to know when she was lying, but sometimes young enough to believe her anyway. "It's getting dark." "Your point being?" "Things come out in the dark, don't they? In the forests? Things with teeth? They get hungry, too." "Only in movies," she answered recklessly. "If you see it in a movie, it isn't real." He wasn't young enough to buy that. "What about elephants?" he demanded. "Elephants are real. How do you know? And orcas. I saw one in the aquarium. And bats. Oh, stop arguing, she snapped crossly. Nothing in these woods is going to come out in the dark and eat you. So he grabbed for her at the same time she grabbed for him, at the sudden high-pitched scream of terror that came from the depth of the wood. They clung together a moment, babbling. What was that? What was that? Somebody's getting eaten. I told you they come out now. I told you who comes out. Werewolves and vampires and witches. Ewan dived against her with a grasp as something big crunched across the leaves toward them. Dawn, her hands icy, hugged him close and searched wildly around her for witches. Someone said, Owl. She couldn't see him. She spun, dragging Ewan with her. A tree must have spoken, or that bush with all the little berries on it. She turned again, frantically. Maybe he was up a tree. No, he was just there, standing at the edge of shadow, under an immense tree with a tangle of branches and one leaf left to fall. He seemed to hover under the safety of the tree, like the deer they had seen earlier, curious, but wary, motionless, tense to run. Their alien eyes, wide, liquid, dark. So were his, under a lank flap of hair, like the blazing end of a match. He didn't say anything else. He just looked at them, and Dawn, staring back, remembered that he was the only human they had seen all afternoon, and he might vanish like the deer if she startled him. Who? She said, her breath still ragged. I thought Owls said who? Screech Owl, he answered, and seemed to think that explained matters. His voice was gentle, unexpectedly deep, though he didn't look too much older than she. Ewan was peeking out from under Dawn's elbow, sizing up the stranger. He pulled back from her a little, recovering dignity. We're lost, he admitted, now that they had been found. We walked up a road after lunch, and then we saw some deer in the trees, and we tried to get closer to them, but they ran, and we followed. And then we saw a stream with some rocks that you could walk across, and then after we crossed it, there were giant mushrooms everywhere, pink and gray and yellow, and that's where we saw the black and white squirrel. The stranger's face changed in a way that fascinated Dawn. Its stillness remained. Something shifted beneath the surface. Smile. His thoughts, maybe. Or his bones. He let fall another word. Skunk. I told you so, Dawn breathed. And then we followed. My name is Dawn Chase, she interrupted Ewan, who was working his way through the entire afternoon. This is my brother Ewan. We're staying with our Uncle Ridley. The young man's face went through another mysterious transformation. This time, it seemed as though he had flowed away from himself, disappeared, leaving only a mask of himself behind. Ridley Chase. You know him? He nodded. He took a step or two out of the trees and pointed. Dawn saw nothing but more trees and a great gathering of shadows spilling down from the sky, riding across the world. She clasped her hands tightly. Please, I don't know where I am or where I'm going. I never knew how dark a night could get until I came here. Can you take us back? He didn't answer, just turned and started walking. Dawn gazed after him uncertainly. Then she felt Ewan's damp, dirty hand grip hers, tug her forward, and she followed. The moon rose just when it got so dark that the bright hair always just ahead of them seemed about to disappear. Dawn stopped, stunned. It was a storybook moon, immense, orange as a pumpkin, the face on it as clear as if it had been carved out of crystal. Surely it couldn't be the same little white thumbnail moon that she noticed now and then floating above the city, along with three stars and a dozen flashing airplane lights. This moon loomed over the planet like it had just been born, and she, Dawn Chase, was the first human to stand on two legs to look at it. She felt Ewan pulling at her. Come on, We're home. Home? Under that moon? She thought confusedly. Home? In what universe? He dragged her forward a step, and she saw the light beneath the moon, the lantern that Uncle Ridley had hung on the deer horns, nailed above the cabin door. She looked around, dazed like an animal with too much light. Where did he go? Ewan was running across the little clearing, halfway to the cabin. Come on, he shouted, and the door swung open. Uncle Ridley stuck his round, hairy face out, grinning at them. The old retriever at his knee barked wildly with excitement. There you are, he shouted. I knew you'd find your way back. But we didn't, Dawn said, her eyes flicking through the moonlit trees. They cast moon shadows across the pale ground. The air had turned smoky with light. There was someone. I'm starving, Ewan cried, trying to wiggle past the dog, who was trying to lick his face. What's for supper? Bambi, Uncle Ridley answered exuberantly. That was enough to make the deer Dawn saw at the edge of the clearing sprint off with a flash of white tail. She stepped onto the porch, puzzled, still trying to find him. Someone brought us home, she told Uncle Ridley, who was holding the door open for her. Who? I don't know, he never said. He hardly talked at all. He was only a couple of years older than me, I think. He had really bright red hair. Sounds like a hunter, Uncle Ridley said. There are hunters scattered all through these mountains, most of them redheads. Ryan, maybe, or Oakley. More likely, he never uses one word when none will do. He didn't even let me thank him. She stopped at the threshold, her stomach sagging inside her like a leaky soccer ball at the smell of food. Where's Dad? He took the truck out to go searching for you. He was pretty worried. There's always some idiot in the woods who'll take a shot at anything that moves. He's probably lost himself now on all these back roads. I told him there's nothing out there to hurt you in the dark. Even the bears would run. Bears? But it's best if you don't roam far from the cabin during hunting season. Come in before the bats do, and have some stew. It smells great. He shut the door behind her. Nothing like fresh venison. Shot it last week. 4-pronged buck, near Hardscrabble Hollow. Venison? She said uncertainly, her throat closing the way it had when he talked about bears. Deer. When she woke the next morning, she was alone. They had all gone hunting, she remembered, even the dog. Earlier, their whispers had half-wakened her. Coffee burbled. The wood stove door squeaked open and shut. Bacon spattered in a pan, though it had to be the middle of the night. Shh, her father kept saying to Ewan, who was so excited that his whispers sounded like strangled shouts. Can I really shoot it? Shh. Finally, they had all cleared out, and she had gone back to sleep. Now the quiet cabin was filled with a shifting underwater light as leaves fell in a constant shower, like colored rain past the windows. She lay on the couch watching them for a while, random thoughts blowing through her head. She could eat deer, she had found, especially if it was called venison. She hoped Ewan wouldn't kill anybody. He had never shot a rifle in his life. Uncle Ridley had invited her to come with them, but she didn't really want to be faced with the truth of the link between those wary liquid eyes and what had smelled so irresistible in her bowl last night. The eyes in her memory changed subtly, became human. She shifted, suddenly finding possibilities in the coming day. She hadn't seen his face clearly in the dusk, just enough to make her curious. The stillness in it, the way it revealed expression without moving. She sat up abruptly, combing her short, dark hair with her fingers. If she stayed in the clearing in front of the cabin, no one would mistake her for a deer, and maybe he would see her there. She sat for a time on the lumpy ground in the clearing, pretending to read, then for another stretch of time, on a rock at the edge of the stream that ran past the side of the house, swatting at bugs and watching the falling leaves catch in the current and sail away. She was half asleep in the sagging wicker chair on the cabin porch, feeling the sun pushing down on her eyelids, when the boards thumped hollowly under her. She opened her eyes. He didn't speak, just gave an abrupt little nod. Even close, she couldn't see the pupils in his eyes. They were that dark. Again, she had the impression of expression just beneath the surface of his face, like a smile just before it happened. She straightened in the chair, blinking, then ruffled at her hair and smiled at him. His skin was the warm brown of old leaves, the muscles and tendons visible in his throat, around his mouth. The sun picked out strands of gold in his fiery hair. "Ryan?" she guessed, remembering what Uncle Ridley had said. "Or is it Oakley?" "Oakley," he said in his husky, gentle voice. "Oakley Hunter." "Everyone's gone," she explained, in case he wondered. But he seemed to know. He hadn't even glanced through the screen door. He sat down on the edge of the porch, his movements quiet, neat, like an animal's. "Dawn," he said softly, and she blinked again. No one had ever said her name that way. It seemed a word she hadn't heard before. "I stopped by to ask," he continued, surprising her further by stringing an entire sentence together, "if you'd like to take a walk with me." Her feet still felt yesterday in them, the endless hike, but she stood on them promptly without thinking twice. "Sure." It didn't take her far, but it was far enough that she was lost within 5 minutes. This time she didn't care. She rambled contentedly beside him through the wood he knew, listening to him name grackles and nuthatches, elderberries, yarrows, maples, and birch, and oak. She told him about the ungainly turkey. He told her the name of the nut she had thrown at it. "They only fan their tails for courting," he explained, "like peacocks." "How long have you lived here?" she asked. "I mean, your family. You were born here, weren't you?" He nodded. "There have been hunters in these mountains forever. Do they ever leave? Or are they all like you?" He turned his dark eyes at her, waiting for the rest of it. She felt the warmth of blood like light under her skin. "I mean, I can't see you taking off to live in the city." She paused, laughed a little. "I can't even see you buying a slice of pizza in the village deli." "I've eaten pizza," he said mildly. "There are hunters scattered all over the world." He took his eyes from her face then, but she still felt herself in his thoughts. He drew breath, took another step or two before he spoke. "Every year in autumn, we have a big gathering, a family reunion. They've been coming for days now. It begins tonight, when the full moon rises." "I thought that was last night." "It seemed that way, didn't it? But one side lacked a full arc. You had to look carefully." "It was beautiful," she sighed. "That's all I saw." She felt his eyes again, lingering on her face. "Yes, it doesn't seem possible that there could be that many people back in the hills. Yesterday we didn't see anyone for hours, not even a car, until we saw you." "Oh, they're here," he said mildly. "Most of them live in a wood or a forest somewhere in the world. They're used to being quiet. Noise scares the animals and trees. We hate to see them suffer." "Noise scares the trees?" "Sure." She looked for his secret smile again, the one he kept hidden in his bones, but she missed it. "You can hear them chattering. When they're scared, they get shot too, along with deer and birds in hunting season." "Anything that moves," Dawn quoted, remembering what Uncle Ridley had said. It sounded like a fairy tale. The old trees aware and quaking at the hunters' guns, unable to run, their leaves trembling together, speaking. Oakley had led her into a different wood than yesterday's wood, she realized suddenly. She was seeing it out of his eyes now, a mysterious, unpredictable place where trees talked and deer lived peacefully among the hunters. She smiled, not believing, but willing to believe anything, as though she were Ewan's age again. Oakley gave her his opaque glance. What's funny? Nothing, he said contentedly. I like your wood. What do you do, all you hunters at the family gathering? Have a barbecue? She winced at the word after she'd given it. Given the love of animals, it seemed unlikely. But he only answered calmly, something like that. After the hunt. She stared at him incredulously. He shrugged a little. We're hunters. We hunt. At night? Under the full moon. It's a family tradition. I thought you said you hated to see animals suffer. We don't hunt the animals. It's mostly symbolic. Oh, then we have a feast, a big party. We build a fire and eat and drink and dance until the moon goes down. She tried to imagine a symbolic hunt. You mean like a game, she guessed. A game of hunting. Yes, he paused. She saw the words gathering in his face, his eyes before he spoke. Sometimes we invite people we know, or friends. We were thinking of maybe asking your uncle, because he likes to hunt so much. You could come too, not to hunt, just to watch. You could stay for the party, watch the moon set with me. Would you like to come? She didn't answer, just felt the answer floating through her, a bubble of happiness, completely full, unable to contain a particle more of the sweet golden air. They wandered on, up a slope, down an old, overgrown road, into a dark wood. Hemlock, he told her, where an underground stream had turned stones and fallen trunks above its path, emerald green and velvety with moss. She could hear water falling softly nearby. They lingered there, while Oakley showed her tiny mushrooms on the moss, ranked like soldiers with bright scarlet caps. You didn't answer my question, he reminded her, and she looked at him, let him see the answer in her face. Yes, she said. Her voice sounded small, breathless among the listening trees. I'd love to come. The world exploded around her. She screamed, not knowing what had happened, not understanding. A crack like lightning had split the air, and then a deer leaped in front of her, so close she could smell its scents of musk and sulfur, so close it seemed immense, its hooves the size of open hands, its horns carrying tier upon tier of prongs, some flying banners of fire as though the lightning had struck it, and all of them, every prong, the color of molten gold. She saw its eyes as it passed, so dark she could not see the pupils, only the red flame burning deep in them. She screamed again. Then she saw three faces at the edge of the wood, all pallid as mushrooms, all staring at her. Behind her she heard the great stag as it bounded from the moss onto dead leaves. And then nothing. The wood was silent. The stag left no other sound of its passage. She heard her father shout her name. They stumbled toward her, slipping on the moss, Uncle Ridley reaching out to take the rifle from Ewan as he began to run. She couldn't move for a moment. She couldn't understand why they were suddenly there, or where Oakley had gone, along with all the fairy magic of the little wood. Then she saw the stag again in her mind, crowned with gold, its huge flanks flowing past her as it leaped, its great hooves shining, and she began to shake. Ewan reached her first, grabbing her around the waist, and then her father holding her shoulders, his face drained, haggard. Are you all right? He kept demanding. Honey, are you all right? I'm sorry, Ewan kept bellowing. I'm sorry. We didn't see you, Uncle Ridley gasped. That buck leaped, and then you were behind it. Thought my heart was going to jump out of me after it. What are you talking about? She whispered, pleading, completely bewildered. What are you saying? How could you get so close to it? How could it have let you come that close? And didn't you think how dangerous that might be in hunting season? It was Oak, she said, still trembling, feeling a tear as cold as ice slide down her cheek. But how could it I have been? Things tumbled in her head. Then bright images like wind-blown autumn leaves, Oakley under the tree, the deer watching at the edge of the wood, the great silent gathering of hunters under the full moon, hunters who loved animals, who hated to see them suffer, who understood the language of trees. He saw Uncle Ridley among them, on foot with his gun, smiling cheerfully at all the hunters around him. Just another one of them, he would have thought, until they began to hunt. It was a hunter, she said, shivering like a tree, tears dropping out of her like leaves. They weren't listening to her. They were talking all at once, Ewan still shouting into her sweater, until she raised her voice, finally feeling on firmer ground now, though she could still feel the other wood, the other world, just beneath her feet. I'm okay, she managed to make them hear. I'm okay. Just tell me, he added in sudden fear, which one of you shot at the deer? It was standing there so quietly, Uncle Ridley explained. Young buck didn't hear us coming. Gave us a perfect shot at it. I couldn't take it. I've got my limit for the season. We all had it in our sights, but we let Ewan take the shot. Figured he'd miss. But your dad was ready to fire after that. So Ewan shot and missed it, and the deer jumped, and we saw you. Her father dropped his face in one hand, shook his head. I came within an inch of shooting you. Your mother is going to kill me. So you won't go hunting again. Not this season, Uncle Ridley. Not this season, he answered. And not until I stop seeing you standing there behind anything I take aim at. Then it will be all right, I think, she said shakily, peeling Ewan's arms from around her. Then I think you'll all be safe. Ewan, stop crying. You didn't hurt me. You didn't hurt anything. He raised his red, contorted, small, tracked face. You rescued us, she thought, and took his hand, holding it tightly, as though she might lose her way again if she let go. And who knew in what ageless realm of golden fire, of terror and beauty, she might have found herself among that gathering under the full moon. Some day, she promised the invisible hunter, I will come back and find out. Still holding her brother's hand, she led them out of the wood.